G'day and welcome to TAG, the Technology for the Average Guy podcast. This is the podcast you want to listen to if you want to find out what's new in the world of technology and really why you should care. This is episode one. We're coming to you from Sydney. My name is Roger Lawrence. My co-hosts include James McCutcheon and Nick Rayner. You can find us on the interwebs at Rog42, James MCC, or Aussie Nick. So guys, tell us a little bit about yourselves and what we've got in store for the show today.
Yeah, my name is James McCutcheon, and I'm the founder of a company called Foundry 38, and we specialize basically in turning what we call startups into businesses, in a nutshell, which basically means that we help people, you know, whether they're concepts on web or mobile, into real applications.
And I'm Nicholas Rayner, a.k.a. Aussie Nick. I work for a government agency, primarily in workforce development, and very passionate community user group around Microsoft.
I always love having somebody who works for a government agency on the show. The white panel van with the tinted windows is sitting outside. My name is Roger Lawrence. You can find out about me on the internet as Rog42. I'm actually the founder and CEO of an IT startup called Rog42 Enterprises. We'll be doing a bunch of things mainly around enabling farmers and also enabling people with mobile technology. But enough about us. Let's talk about the show. This week, we're going to be looking at three topics. James is going to lead out a segment on smartphones. What smartphone should you get? Should you change the one you've got? Nick is going to be talking to us about Windows 7. There's a lot of hype about Windows 7 being released at the moment. And really, is it worth the upgrade or even the changeover from Mac? I'm going to be talking a little bit about tablet PCs. They've been argued about in the press this week. And what is the hype about tablet PCs? So that's the first episode of Technology for the Average Guy. Okay, James, so smartphones, tell us about it.
Yeah, I spent the last week actually traveling around different locations in Australia with some of the Microsoft guys preaching about Marketplace. And it was actually interesting meeting different ilks and different types of people.
Ilks?
Ilks.
Is that an elk in New Zealand?
It could be. I just like to invent words. It's just easier than to come out the real ones. The interesting thing, though, is you know, what we've learnt this week about what Marketplace has done. I suppose the first bit of news, which is interesting to discuss, is the position of Windows Mobile itself. We saw Gartner coming out with a report this week saying that we had a 23% increase in sales of smartphones from last year to this year. So we have a big increase, obviously. But Windows Mobile themselves had a flat. They actually lost a minor amount of sales on this quarter. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a worrying trend for Windows Mobile. Obviously, in consumer space, pushing harder and harder into those devices, but yet we're not seeing the actual take-up of those Windows Mobile. And obviously, that's a concern to Microsoft.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably a concern to Microsoft. Is it really a concern, or are they just biding their time until Windows 7 comes out?
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of these commentators are thinking that Microsoft have played their consumer card. I think they've still got that playbook in there. They haven't really seriously attacked this space. You know, there's lots of interesting rumors floating around about when and WIF and what they're going to be doing for 7, the new Zune HD. You know, how that going to sit into the structure and stuff. So I think, yeah, I mean, I don't think they've played they've fired their guns yet, you know. So I think they don't have a lot of time left to fire their gun. You know, I'm thinking they should have at least put it over the fort wall and had a shot by now, but they haven't yet done that, which I think is a bit frustrating.
Yeah,
I completely agree with James. I was a big Windows Mobile fan, but unfortunately, since the iPhone 3GS came out, I've used it non-stop ever since. Just the ecosystem around the application ecosystem, the ability to be able to buy apps anywhere, anytime, free and paid, the quality of the apps are absolutely amazing. Apple have done a great job fixing up some of the issues that were in OS 1 and 2, especially around what I use, Connect to Exchange, some document apps on there as well. It's fantastic.
Okay, so as an average guy, I mean, you're talking some great jargon words there. OS 1, OS 2, Exchange. What does it mean? Why would I need a smartphone? You said that the trend is that people are changing their normal, you know, I can SMS and I can make calls on this phone for a smartphone. So that's a huge trend. And then within that trend, the trend is that it's switching from, there was a lot of Windows Mobile smartphones out there, or Microsoft ones, and it seems to be switching more towards BlackBerry and Apple. Would that be And I guess the question is why? Why would I worry about a smartphone? Why don't I just have my phone that I can text people and call people with?
Well, I think what the demand or what people want on a device in a consumer space has changed a lot in the last 18 months or so. You know, when you look at the advertising that Apple now make, they don't never sell the iPhone. You know, they sell apps, right? You know, like every ad that you see, you know, it's like, oh, you shake it and it picks a restaurant, you know, and it doesn't say, oh, wow.
Have you used that app?
No, I haven't. You
know. Yeah, exactly.
But but people go, oh, you know, they're not selling the features on the phone like, oh, it's got this much RAM or it's got a GPS or anything like that. They're not talking about features on the phone ever. They talk about apps. I mean, they're actually selling it as a application platform rather than a phone per se, and people get that.
Okay, so here's a question. You've been speaking about, Nick, you've been speaking about the 3GS, the iPhone 3GS, which is the latest one from the Apple stable. James, you've just been going around the country talking to developers for Windows Mobile. You have a smartphone?
No.
You don't have a smartphone?
Well, not my daily one, no. I own one, but I don't use it. My physical phone I use is an iPhone.
You know? Okay, so that's a smartphone, right?
Yeah.
That's
what I'm talking about. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I thought you meant like, yeah, sorry.
And I'm not saying Windows smartphone. That's an old brand which died 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I used to work for Microsoft, which I suppose I better put out as a disclaimer. And the phone that I'm using of choice at the moment is the iPhone as well. So here's three of us. Now, I wouldn't say we're average guys around technology. We've all used technology either as part of our careers, if not a major part of our careers. And yet we're all using the iPhone, and you're saying that this is because of the applications. Is that what's missing from the other platforms? Is that what's missing from BlackBerry, from Nokia, from Microsoft?
Yeah, definitely. I believe it is. I believe it's ability for people to use it into their daily life, integrating into those products, wherever else. That's where there's a true value, I think, in a great device. How it integrates. You're changing that device into how you live, you know, because it's what you need.
Yeah, completely agree with James. Just the personalization from the amount of apps out there. If they had even half the number of apps on Windows Mobile, it would be a much stronger platform.
But they do.
They just do. You just can't find them.
Yeah, you just can't find them because some are over here on a Hindango, some are on another site, some are off.
Yeah, one of the fundamental things that I've found is there's actually a total mind shift, right? The way that I now view. I mean, I've had Windows mobile phones for years, and I just download apps as I need them functionally. But what about from a developer's perspective? James, what do you reckon about that?
Well, I think this is where there's a big difference between the Microsoft world and, say, the iPhone world. Is that you know, as a developer, you put all the effort in, you code for weeks on end, you finish your app, you ship it up to Apple, and Apple says, nah. What do? You know, there's nothing you can do. And we're going through some of the rules of what you can do with Marketplace, and some of them are very interesting, you know, in itself. I mean, just really quickly to read one about it, you know, it says that for violence, you know, if your application is not allowed to show any blood splatter and is not allowed to show any anything of multiple hitting, which is like every game invented since time. But
Flight Control doesn't have any hitting.
Well, that's right. That's how it got through, obviously. But I think the interesting thing there is that as a developer in the Marketplace thing, if you've done all that work and Microsoft says, you know what, you don't belong in Marketplace, you can still have sideload. You still can go off and build your own community around your application and away you can go and do some actual stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. I honestly didn't know that, because a lot of the complaints with the Apple App Store is if Apple say no, you've got no choice.
That's right.
And you've seen what's happened with Google Voice last week in the US. Apple rejected the Google Voice app, and now Apple being investigated.
Well, see, that will be rejected by Microsoft as well, by their own rules, you know, in Marketplace, because it replaces the SMS capabilities of the device. It actually does a voice over IP, over a cellular network. Won't be allowed. But you can still download it and put it on your device if you want to. Just can't get through Marketplace.
Right. And I think this comes to a fundamental question about, even though we find the iPhone useful, and we're probably pandering to Steve Jobs, right? He's effectively acting as censor, right? He's telling us, yes, children, this is what you're allowed to learn. This is what you're allowed to see. This is what you're allowed to do on the phone. And in fact, it actually raises even more of an antitrust question, because Microsoft was slammed a couple of years ago for bundling, or even now with the European Union, for bundling Internet Explorer and Windows 7, right? So they've got to give a choice of browsers. But not only does the iPhone bundle the Safari browser, they actively stop anybody else from putting a browser on, right? talk about anti-competitive. And it's not like they're the minimum player in the marketplace anymore. 48 million devices. They're one of the major players in the smartphone device.
Yeah, and I think that's from a business point of view, why would you invest into building an application that you may never be allowed to ship?
Okay, so let's talk about our next subject then, and we're going to be talking about Windows 7. Handing over to Nick.
Windows 7 is Microsoft's latest and greatest operating system. It really is the greatest operating system that I've seen come from Microsoft.
Isn't that always the case, though? Isn't like the latest one always greater than the last one? Isn't that by definition?
By definition, yes. And usually it's also more bigger and more expensive. But that's something that Microsoft have done different this year. They've made it actually a smaller footprint than, so a smaller install size than what Windows Vista was. It's actually cheaper to buy than what Windows Vista was. So we're able to drive down the cost of laptops slightly.
So it's cheaper, it's smaller. So basically you need less space, right?
Yep, less space. You can run it on the netbooks that's so popular at the moment. You can run it on a $400 device. You can run it on a six-year-old machine because of the performance improvements within Windows 7 is fantastic. So I think James installed it on a Pentium 4 PC with half a gigabyte of RAM.
Exactly. I ran that on for my kids. I was just installing something out of desperation. That's the only thing installed I could find at the time. Didn't want to dig out the MSDN and download a whole new copy of XP Home Edition or something for my kids just to run Winnie the Pooh on. And, I thought, this is... But, last time I did on XP, couldn't find the video drivers, couldn't find the network drivers, couldn't find anything. Bang. Windows 7, found them all. Had my computer up and running within, 10 minutes. Brilliant. Love it.
Okay, so for your average person, Windows 7 is quicker to install. It runs on older, potentially older PCs with less memory.
Yep.
What about the whole security thing, right? Because Microsoft was slammed in the past because of the security on XP up until, I think it was Service Pack 3, which is Service Pack being an update for the latest bug fixes and things.
So the Windows Vista, there was major security enhancements made. There's a lot of negative press around that, especially from antivirus vendors who had to modify their software significantly to work with the new security models in Vista. Microsoft have built on top of that to make Windows 7 even more secure.
I think the mums and pops out there, or the average business person, small business owner, really their major concern is downloading some sort of Trojan back door opening sort of thing. Is there anything there to help?
And that's one of the arguments that macOS has, right? So macOS just keeps on talking about the fact that there's no viruses that hit Mac. It looks cool and there's no viruses. So why Windows 7? Why would you go Windows 7?
Well, I think there's a lot of compatibility features that Microsoft have built into Windows 7. They're touting as their most compatible OS ever, even more than XP and Vista. In terms of the security features, IE8 has enhanced security on Windows 7.
Yeah.
One of the cool things is it actually highlights the domain name when you go to a website. So if you've gotten an email from the Commonwealth Bank saying you need to reset your password, you click on it, and it'll highlight some domain name. So obviously, if it's a weird domain name, you pull it up straight away, delete the email, close IE.
Yeah, so the domain name, basically the name of the website, which shows you whether it is actually the website it's saying that it is. I'm actually running Windows 7 64-bit on my computer, which is a tablet, which we'll talk about in a minute. And I bought the SoundDesk, and I needed to get an audio to USB or an audio to FireWire interface. And one of the things that I'm finding is that certainly in the music industry, there's not a lot of companies that are writing drivers for Windows 7 at the moment. So there's a bunch of drivers for XP and Vista, virtually none for 64-bit. And yet, all the 64-bit drivers are written for macOS, right? So obviously, that's their marketplace.
Yeah.
But there are devices out there. And
did you have problems?
No problems at all.
See, I think that's the cool thing, right? I remember when I first started using Vista, you kept running into all these problems. And you go somewhere to get a drive, and I said it was XP only or something because you're on the bleeding edge, and then you'd go, what do I do?
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
Actually, I don't think you needed to be on the bleeding edge with Vista.
No, you could come in.
I think you could have a bog standard inkjet printer, plenty of drivers for it, not only the HP drivers, but Microsoft drivers for XP, but it wouldn't work in Vista. And you couldn't even put it into compatibility mode. It just wouldn't work.
Okay, so summarizing it all up is, where do we go and get this from? How much will it cost us?
So Windows 7 will be available from October 22. So you'll be able to get that from retail stores. You'll be able to buy the box yourself, install it on your own PC. You'll be able to buy it through manufacturers. So if you buy a new HP, buy a new Dell, have it pre-installed. An interesting thing in the US, they've got a home premium value pack, which comes with three licenses, so you can install it up to three PCs for just $150. So around about 280 Australian bucks for a full copy of Windows 7. It's awesome.
That's pretty awesome, right? I mean, if you did the Mac from Leopard to Snow Leopard, which is like a service pack install, that's going to cost you $20 to do a service pack install on Mac. And you're saying that an entire... Is that an upgrade or is that a...
No, that is a full license. So an entire family can have Windows 7 on their PC for $150.
$150, three copies. That'll cover most families, and the families that it doesn't cover, that'll be, they'll just get two of those.
So what are they going to do in Australia, though?
That's still cheaper than a copy of Vista was, right? A home premium.
Definitely. Well, there was no kind of family pack for Vista. There's nothing. This is the first time Microsoft have ever done it. They've done it for Office before.
Yeah.
And now they've finally done it for Windows 7. So James asked, is it coming to Australia? We don't know. Microsoft haven't told us.
Interesting.
Okay. Well, Windows 7 is coming to Australia. So whether or not the licensing is going to be friendly to us, you're saying it's a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer, yeah. On October 22, go out, get Windows 7.
One of the things that Windows 7 totally enables is the tablet PC. And I don't know if you've heard about what tablet PC is, but we'll get the distributor in Australia, Hugo Ortega from Tegatech, to tell us really about what a tablet PC is. But before we do, let's talk a bit about the articles that we've seen in the press. This week, Wired magazine came out with 2010, the year of the tablet. And they gave a whole bunch of reasons why they reckon that finally, after 5 years, the tablet is coming into its own. Then that article was totally dissed in by a guy in livedigitally.com, where he just talks about all the reasons why tablets suck. So very quickly, before we hand over to my interview with Hugo, what do you reckon, James?
Well, haven't they said this all before? Wasn't last year meant to be that? It just seemed to be the same thing.
I think 2010 will be the year of the tablet, probably more redefining what a tablet is and bringing touch into the scene rather than focusing on the stylus input.
Yeah, so let's hear from Hugo. I'm here with Hugo from Tegatech Australia, pretty much the distributor for tablet computers in Australia. So Hugo, tell us a little bit about yourself and history of Tegatech.
Hi Roger, and thanks for having me on the show. My name's Hugo. Yeah, well, I'm a Microsoft MVP, and that's something I'm proud of. And that's for this mobile PC, touch, tablet PC computing environment. And Tegatech was really just a means to supply Australian-based resellers of these mobile computers. And the reason that we focused on it through the wholesale was that we found that via resellers, we're going to have a more exponential way of communicating the message across Australia.
Right. Whereas you amplify your effect.
We amplify.
You talk about a love for this. Define a tablet PC for us. Because, I talk to a lot of people. I've got a tablet. Obviously, you supplied me. Disclaimer, Rog42 is a reseller of Tegatech. There are a lot of people who, if you said to them tablet computer, they just don't know what you're talking about.
That's right. The definition has changed in the last few years. Now, a tablet PC commenced with the idea that pen-based computing mm-hmm. was what a tablet PC concept was all about. It has moved on to now a mobility concept. So a tablet PC is something that people envisage that you pick up and you run with. Now, to replace pen and paper, yes, but more recently, tablet PCs are focused on resistive touch computing. So the ability to tap with the pad of your fingertip, just like the checkout girls at Woolies or Coles. That sort of touch computing is now also synonymous with tablet PC. So the definition of a tablet PC to me is a mobile PC that has the ability to interact with either finger or pen.
So essentially we're talking about two totally different concepts there. The one is ink-based computing and the other one is touch-based computing.
Right. Right.
So if we look at something, I know last week we had the Wired article which basically said that 2010 was the year of the tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, we had an article from a website, livingdigitally.com, which spoke about why tablets still suck.
Yeah, Roger. Well, if you step back a second, just regarding those two articles, think about it logically. One of them is wrong. By all accounts, our business is growing. And through the economic climate that we're in, we shouldn't be growing.
Yeah.
So it's telling me that perhaps the guy that's suggesting next year is the year, he's more right than wrong. So that's just from my opinion and just based on mathematics, what's coming through our doors. Where he's suggesting it's the public is possibly looking at tablet PC as a non-event so far, is because, A, they were really expensive, so you're paying a lot to get something that was quite rich in pen features, but most people have a cost issue up front, so they weren't able to outlay the cost to get this added pen feature. Secondly, when they were in fact outlaying this money, they were buying something that was, and I'm talking maybe 3 to 5 years ago, half the processing power of the computer today.
Yeah.
Now, the good news is the price has come down and the processor has gone up. So all of a sudden, where people are touting perhaps next year as being the year for tablet is because all the stars, moons, and everything are aligning.
Yeah.
And that's the way we see it.
The thing that I've noticed over the last couple of years is the change from slate computer to hybrid. Is that the case? Have we moved away from the slate?
Well, it's actually a really clever question. And the reason is that the easiest way to look at pen-based computing was to grab a bit of paper, grab a pen, and in a boardroom prior to the induction of the whole architecture and the concept was to suggest, let's replace the paper with a computer and a pen with a digital pen, and hence the slate.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was, and this is, and it's actually something I want to touch on, which is important, is nowadays there's a paradigm going on, and it's a mental paradigm that's quite a difficult one for education. They're feeling this quite strongly, and I think you've probably heard of this, where it's now scientifically been tested that people think differently with a pen in their hand as they do with a keyboard.
Mm.
And the dilemma is that we think faster in a keyboard nowadays because it's been something that's become so much part of our lifestyle that we actually can react faster with shortcuts, can type faster, and can function faster with a keyboard than we can with a pen. So what happens is the hybrid is becoming more popular because of this same paradigm where people will still probably function faster with the keyboard.
Yeah.
So that's why we're getting closer to this success, and that's why we've got a hybrid where people can now think at the speed of typing and then function with the value add of the pen.
Okay, so are there industries that you've seen particular take up of tablets and maybe even slates?
Lots, and it's again, it's a good question. The synergy between tablet PC and mobility is so big, and people aren't really just getting that just yet, and maybe 2010 is the year.
Mm.
Now, the fact is, connectivity is now inbuilt. Your computer, my computer, inbuilt modems.
Yeah.
The SIM card is housed in the computer. Now what you have is a tablet PC with pen functions and your mobile. So to answer which industries, any industry that can have a web-based application is now in love with the function of a slate, for example. The slate, indeed, can get rid of the keyboard if, in fact, you live in a world of radio buttons and drop-down menus. Yeah? Because if that's the case, all you need is your finger.
Right.
And if you live in a world where you have to capture, you have to do radio buttons, drop down menus, and some input of sentences. So, for example, a lot of success we've had is with mobile sales forces. So, when it comes to things like home valuation, when it comes to car auction yards, so IAG is buying these in the lots. People that are doing inspections, so home inspections, for example, the Department of Housing buys tablet PCs in the hundreds.
You know, I definitely resonate with that. Okay, anything else that you reckon for the average guy? I mean, what would you recommend that the average person looks for in a tablet?
Well, I think price is the main factor. But what I'd always beg of the consumer is to look past price for just a minute, because you get what you pay for. With a computer that you're going to spend some money on that has some value add, make sure that you learn to decipher between the value add. So look at which has a best pen experience or a best touch experience. Now, you can't do that with the salesperson in front of you. It's not going to happen. We all know that. How do you do that then? There's plenty of pen-based enthusiasts out there. So just Google tablet blogs and you'll get a multitude of listings. Talk to those guys. They're always happy to answer your questions. And ultimately, I think if anyone out there wants to get involved with a tablet PC today, start with a touch-based tablet. Have some fun. Use your finger. Download a whole bunch of apps for your playing music. Look at Centrifuge, for example. That's all pen touch-based, audio-based sort of handling of your media files.
Yeah, I guess this leads to my next question, which is, are there any people where you would not recommend buying a tablet?
Yeah, well, there's probably a whole bunch, and power users is a good place to start. So people that multitask heavily are going to struggle with ultra-mobile PCs and mobile internet devices, so UMPCs and MIDs. They're not going to struggle, as of late, especially as of the last 3 months, with a full-fledged tablet PC because the processing power is right up there and above most notebooks. Do I think tablets for everyone? Absolutely, yes. Does Bill Gates think tablets for everybody? Yes, absolutely. And like I say, when I get the difference to $1,000 for a Dell and $1,100 for a Fujitsu or a Samsung tablet PC, then we're talking everyone will buy one. It's a no-brainer.
Mm. All right. Anything else you have to say for listeners of the show?
Well, like I said, I was in a meeting yesterday and people were eyeballing me going, you know, where's it all headed? And to be honest, my answer to them was, this is my life. This is growing, and I see no rest for us with this.
No retirement anytime soon. Well, hey, Yugo, I just want to say thank you very much for being the very first guest on the very first episode of Tech for the Average Guy podcast.
That's great.
And I hope that we can, you know, come back maybe in 2010 and have a reprise interview. Thanks very much for your time, mate.
Good on you, Rod. Thanks, mate. Bye, everyone.
Okay, so that's Hugo from a distributor's perspective. What do you reckon, James?
I mean, to me, I think they're a great gadget. I mean, I think interesting toys. I don't know. I don't see how it gets into my daily use. I mean, you guys seem to love them and use them, but for some reason, for me, I've never connected with mine.
And talking about more features and also the Microsoft-Apple battle, I was actually meeting with an advertising marketing company this morning, and of course, they're all Mac. I took my tablet PC to take notes in the meeting, opened it up, turned it around, started inking on the screen, and they were all, their just jaws just dropped because they can't do that on the Mac. They were all asking how you can do it.
And, you know, I take what you say, James, about your handwriting. I've seen it. But there are plenty of average people who are filling in a shed load of paper in their day job, and then they have to take those paper forms, and some poor soul has to re-input them. So I think for the average person, this year is where we get to the performance price point of being able to use this electronically and not to have to worry about printing paper, writing form, creating forms, printing them, filling them in, and then inputting them into some other device.
So right? what ballpark figure are we looking at?
Well, we're looking at tablet PCs. They range anywhere from $1,800 up through to $5,000, depending on what features you want.
Okay, so it's laptop equivalent.
So, yeah, similar to a good quality laptop. So not at your netbook pricing, not yet.
And to wrap this up, every single person that I've spoken to that I show the tablet to goes, where can I get one of those? And then you've got the person who, you know, like here we are, we're editing sound on this. I edit video on my tablet. You can get that, and you're paying the same price as you would for a high-end laptop to be able to do video editing anyway, right? So for me, I reckon 2010 is definitely the year of the tablet. It's a no-brainer. If you do a lot of paperwork in your job or whatever you could use a computer for, go and get one, or at least try them out. Okay, so let's wrap up the show. In summary, for each of the three segments, what do you reckon, Nick?
So I reckon if you're looking to get a new mobile phone, seriously consider the smartphones, whether you go out and get a BlackBerry, a Windows mobile device, or an iPhone. Go and look for a device that suits your needs. Don't listen to the hype that's out there.
Are there any people or user groups that people can go and talk to about these kinds of devices?
Yep, there's a couple of user groups out there. One is Sydney Mobile User Group, which means the second Tuesday of every month at Microsoft Australia in North Ryde. The other one is Mobile Mondays, which meets the first Monday of every month in the city.
What about Windows 7?
So Windows 7, bottom line, October 22, go out and buy it. That's all.
And tablet PCs?
Tablet PCs, if you've never seen a tablet PC, have a look at them, have a play with them, see what they can do for you, and give them a go.
Superb. So let's talk about our next episode. What are we going to be talking in the next episode? James, what are you going to be leading with?
I'm going to go down the business side of the world and look at accounting software, online accounting software. What's the differences between running, say, MYOB and, say, an online package, where the advantages, disadvantages are.
Okay, great.
I'm going to talk about netbooks and mobile internet devices, so small devices that are built for connecting to the web.
Great. And I'm going to be talking about, are we there yet with running all of our computing in the cloud? So I'm going to be comparing, do you really need a PC anymore, or can you just get yourself a cheap netbook and run everything from the cloud? So that's our next show. Who do you follow on Twitter? What podcast do you listen to? And what blog do you read? James?
The follower, I definitely would go Mr. Andy Puppy. He's a great guy, and he does a lot of stuff around Xboxing, so that's cool. My podcast I like to listen to would be This Week in Startups by Jason Calacanis. You know, things about starting your business, all that kind of stuff. And the last thing, obviously, blog. A bit of humor, actually, I'm going to go for Fail Blog. If you want to see some good, funny videos of strange positions for people to be in, that's a great place to go.
I would follow Long Zheng on Twitter, so Longzheng. He's a blogger that focuses mainly on Microsoft stuff. The podcast I'd listen to would be Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Leo Laporte, focusing mainly on Microsoft, including Windows, Windows Live, Xbox, and all that kind of cool stuff. The blog I would read would be gottabemobile.com, which focuses on mobile computing from tablet PCs all the way down to 5-inch mobile internet devices.
Awesome. And the person I follow on Twitter for this week is White African, talks all about how you use high and low tech to change people's lives in Africa. The podcast that I'm listening to at the moment is The World's Tech Podcast with Clark Boyd. It's a joint venture between Public Radio International and BBC World Service. They look at how technology is being used around the world, particularly in the third world. And the blog I'm going to talk about, Long Zheng's blog, istartedsomething.com, If you want to find out anything from Microsoft before they do the press release, you got to read that. That's it for us for Tech for the Average Guy. Hope you've enjoyed listening. If you've got any criticisms, comments, or encouragement, please feel free to follow us on Twitter and to email us. We'll put all the links to the different sites up in our show notes. The podcast I am listening to at the moment, apart from our own, is World's Tech Podcast. How could I forget? Clarkboy. That